And do you know how many people would probably, like, run away at the sight of dismembered legs?
Yeah. Dude, there's a 4-foot bong and a bag of wheat by your bed.
Chili Wings, the parlor game for nerds, is nearing extinction.
It's in my pod! It's in my pod!
I will find proof.
I'm very easily startled, Mr. Fingerman. I don't know which regulation body would regulate the penis ring that you were talking about earlier.
I'm ready to remain conscious as we record this show.
Hey, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark. Autoimmune does not have anything to do with your car, Frankum.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know. And Chris is, wait, what? Fingston over there. How you doing, man?
I got my own nickname this time. I made it. I was kind of
grasping. I didn't really know what I was going to do until you said that.
Well, that's the way you start all these.
Yeah. Yeah, but I didn't know what I was going to say for you. I was kind of winging that one.
Yeah. Well, so I want to do a little bit of recording transparency, how we do this.
We record.
We record, but before we start recording, we record 5 seconds of the ambient noise, and it helps me make a noise filter for later on. And so I always ask for 5 seconds.
Nobody cares.
Well, no, but here's the thing. I always ask for 5 seconds of silence. And every time I say 5 seconds of silence, I immediately think it's like a cockroach's funeral. You know, like,
look, what the hell? How do those two correlate in anybody's mind?
Well, because, so someone dies, like, hey, you know, we're going to have a moment of silence for, you know, those who died in World War II or something like that. And then, you know, it's usually like a moment, like it's usually like a minute. Mm-hmm. And so like 5 seconds of silence, I'm like, okay, well, who would only get 5 seconds? Cockroach.
Why are we having a funeral for cockroaches?
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. That's why it's only an insignificant 5 seconds. This makes sense, Mark. This makes sense. This is normal.
So this evening we're going to be talking about autoimmune disorders. So autoimmune disorders. Chris, what do you know about autoimmune disorders?
Honestly, not a lot. Aren't we glad that I'm one of the hosts on this?
Right.
But anyway, autoimmunity means your immune system cannot tell the difference between these foreign invaders and your body's healthy tissue. So auto means self. As a result, it creates autoantibodies that attack and destroy healthy tissue. There's quite a few examples of that.
So some of them would be rheumatoid arthritis, which is a chronic inflammatory.
Were you struggling with inflammation?
We were in the last. Yeah, we are really. It's a chronic swelling disorder affecting many joints.
Inflammation.
I will not put up with this inflammation again, sir.
There's a comedian. So the next one we're going to talk about here is lupus. There's a comedian. He talks about he makes a joke about lupus, which I don't know if that's classy or not. But he's like, yeah, lupus. He's like, it sounds like my neighbor. You know, like, oh yeah, who's that? Jorge Lupus. He's a really nice guy. Or, Lupus Gonzalez is what he says. He says, yeah, Lupus Gonzalez, really nice guy.
So lupus is, and we'll get into lupus here in a little bit. An inflammatory disease caused when the immune system attacks its own tissues. You have psoriasis, which is where the T cells collect in the skin, and then your immune system stimulates skin cells to reproduce rapidly, producing silvery scales, scaly plaques, and everything like that on the skin.
Actually, sir, that's a psoriasis.
Like a Puffingston?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Puffizer and Puffucking Pussy? Yeah. you have – that was actually how I let Chris know we were working together on a shift the very first time we pulled a full – shift rotation.
I barely remember this story.
I left you a voicemail. Said, hey, man, I just saw the shift bids. I'm working with some guy whose last name is Puffingston. It spelled like Puffizer or Puffucking Pussy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That was the beginning of a beautiful relationship.
It was. And here we are.
Yeah.
Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It's really like I can nail that, but inflammatory I'm having problems with.
Right. Hashimoto. Rolls right off the tongue.
Exactly. The antibodies produced by the immune system attack the thyroid gland.
Quite frankly, the thyroid gland started it.
Right.
Type 1.
It taunted it.
Yeah. And this is interesting. Mm-hmm. Type 1 diabetes mellitus. Mm-hmm. These immune system antibodies attack and destroy insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. By young adulthood, people with type 1 diabetes require insulin injections to survive.
Now, that is different than type 2 diabetes, which is more of an adult onset, which is more affected by lifestyle.
Yeah, and we do have a diabetes episode for those that have not been listening to us that long. Mm-hmm. So you can go listen to that one.
So also multiple sclerosis. The immune system attacks the nerve cells, causing symptoms that include pain, blindness, weakness, poor coordination, and muscle spasms. Celiac disease, which we will be talking about later, I believe. An immune reaction to eating gluten, a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye.
And obviously, so Mark and I like this. We like to booby trap the other person when we do these, and we literally leave the hard words for someone else. But obviously, this is Sjogren's syndrome.
Ooh, are you sure about that? Are you really faking it well?
So, actually, I my grandmother spoke German. I took German, and
that's Swedish.
Seeing that, but there's an umlaut over the O.
Lot.
And so I went with the German pronunciation of the word. And it is very Swedish, but I think I nailed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any more information about that?
No. Sorry. That's an immune... Jesus, H. Maloney. That's an immune system disorder characterized by dry eyes and dry mouth.
Polymyalgia rheumatica. Inflammatory disorder caused by muscle pain. I figured I can only say inflammatory if I use my southern accent, see? And stiffness around the shoulders and hips. We've already done multiple sclerosis. Ankylosing spondylitis. Again, messing up inflammatory. We've gotten that one. this is an inflammatory arthritis affecting the spine and larger joints. Alopecia. Sudden hair loss that starts with one or more circular bald patches that may overlap. Vasculitis, which is inflammation of the blood vessels that cover the it affects the blood vessels, basically is what happens. And then temporal arteritis, temporal arteritis, an inflammation of the blood vessels called arteries and in and around the scalp, so in the temporal region. So these are examples of autoimmune disorders. So basically, your body's kind of attacking itself in different ways. It's going on. So autoimmune self, and these can cause some fairly serious problems, life-changing problems. Lupus is an autoimmune disease that happens when the immune system attacks tissues, causing swelling and inflammation, pain, and damage. Lupus symptoms include fatigue, joint pain, fever, and a lupus rash. So how many kinds of lupus are there, Chris?
Well, that's easily answerable by
scrolling back up,
scrolling down to lupus. Sorry, I was Googling something for later. So obviously there are several kinds of lupus. There's systemic lupus. God damn it, Mark. You sunk my battleship. That's all right. Systemic lupus.
Erythematosus.
No, I couldn't get that in coming off. Systemic lupus erythematosus. That sounds like a dinosaur. An erythematosus. Erythematosus. Erythematosus.
SLE.
SLE. Slay. Is the most common type.
You're not slaying that,
I was going to say that. It can be mild or severe and can affect many parts of the body. There's discoid lupus. Never mind, that was a dumb joke. Discoid lupus causes a red rash that doesn't go away.
Get it from listening to the Bee Gees.
subacute cutaneous lupus causes sores after being out in the sun. Drug-induced lupus is caused by certain medicines. It usually goes away when you stop taking the medicine. And neonatal lupus, which is rare, but affects newborns. It is probably caused by certain antibodies from the mother. Lupus is an autoimmune disease that causes the immune system to attack the body's organs. In severe cases, organ damage and failure can occur. Over 90% of people with lupus are women between the ages of 15 and 45.
So, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, historically, lupus caused people to die young, primarily from kidney failure. Today, though, with careful treatment, 80 to 90% of people with lupus can expect to live a normal lifespan. Lupus commonly causes some amount of inflammation. Sometimes lupus can flare up, making symptoms worse. Flares can include joint pain, skin rash, and organ troubles, particularly in the kidneys.
So the kidneys, as we know by listening to the renal system episode of medical stuff, they're the organs that help filter out waste products, and they're located in the retroperitoneal area of your abdomen, meaning they're behind the peritoneal wall.
Pretty much your back.
They are the organs most commonly affected by lupus. If you go back to the renal system episode, you'll find that doing damage to the kidneys causes a plethora of other problems. As your kidneys become more damaged, they can cause More hypertension, which causes your kidneys to become more damaged, which ends up causing renal failure. Long-term inflammation in the kidneys causes this damage, and enough of the kidney becomes scarred, it will begin to lose function, where at that point you're having renal insufficiency or renal failure, and that means that you're going to be doing dialysis treatments probably 3 times a week. You have the effect of the lupus on the heart, and it can cause inflammation of the heart, resulting in increased rate of heart attacks, or artery disease, even in patients in their 20s. So, you know, if you have a patient who's in their 20s who's having a heart attack, you may ask if they have lupus. Inflammation of the lining around the heart can also cause chest pain, which would be pericarditis. When lupus affects the blood, they have a greater greater likelihood of developing anemia or blood clots, which are problematic. It can go back and cause heart attacks at that point. Some people with lupus also have antiphospholipid antibody syndrome. APS increases the risk of developing blood clots and miscarriages, which I did not know about the miscarriages.
No, oh, wow.
You know. I'm assuming because of the blood clots that is what the mechanism behind the increase in miscarriages is. You can have a swelling of the brain. The inflammation occurs in the brain. This can cause headaches, mental problems like memory loss, poor concentration, seizures, meningitis, or even a coma. Some lupus patients also experience changes in mood, particularly with irritability, depression, and anxiety.
So the lungs. Some lupus patients develop inflammation in the lining around the lungs. It's called pleuritis. It causes sharp chest pains when you inhale. If the inflammation spreads to the lungs themselves, they can become scarred. Lung scarring decreases the amount of oxygen the bloodstream can absorb. The main reason that is scar tissue doesn't really do much for you. It doesn't stretch, doesn't expand, it's not elastic. Well, your lungs really need to be elastic.
Well, the thing is, if you have scarring, it's because there was damage done to that area, and so the body has overbuilt that area to keep it from happening again.
Right. And unfortunately, scar tissue is basically useless inner tissue.
I mean, if it's on your arm because you got yourself cut.
Who cares?
Right.
You know.
If it's in your lung, that's a problem.
Yeah, you should care.
You can also cause an increase in pulmonary hypertension.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so patients with lupus or severe lupus is affecting their lungs, they a lot of times have that pulmonary hypertension as a secondary effect.
Oh, that's so fun. So pulmonary hypertension, by the way, is there is a there are blood vessels that go from your lungs back down to your heart, and there's blood vessels that go to your lungs from your heart, and hypertension within that particular blood system is not terribly great.
Right. So then you have lupus affecting your joints. People with lupus commonly have inflammatory arthritis. They wake up in the morning with stiffness and swelling in their joints.
There's a morning wood joke there. I wake up in the morning with stiffness too. Do I have lupus?
Maybe. They wake up in the morning with a stiffness and swelling in their joints, not their penis.
Oh.
Usually in the small joints. Well, I guess it could be you then.
Oh.
I'm all sorry, right. But it's going to be slow pitched. I guess.
All right. Yeah, there you go. All right. Fair enough.
You would have said the same thing, you know.
I absolutely would have.
Sometimes the pain can be very disabling.
It's disabling.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Unlike other forms of arthritis, inflammatory arthritis from lupus rarely deforms the hands.
Hmm. Digestive system. So, inflammation from lupus can spread to the digestive system, hitting organs like the pancreas and the liver. Lupus can also cause the gut to leak protein. This is called protein-losing enteropathy? Yes. It's actually not that hard of a word. I'm just having a hard day. Enteropathy. The condition causes diarrhea and reduces the amount of nutrients that get absorbed.
Infection. The same drugs that prevent lupus. A lot of times, if you have a severe case of lupus, they're going to put you on a immunosuppressant. And that's actually a fairly common medication path for most of your autoimmune disorders. If your immune system is attacking your body, or is overactive and is attacking your body, what's the best way to take care of that?
Right.
Slow down the immune system.
Yeah. Pump the brakes.
Two things. Pump the brakes. But the problem is once you're on the immunosuppressant, you have a greater risk of getting illnesses and infections.
Yeah.
So people with lupus are highly prone to infections, including skin infections and UTIs, which are urinary tract infections, which I believe we cover in our renal system, don't we?
I don't know. Maybe not. We definitely talk about UTIs in the sepsis episode.
That's true. That is very true. They could even get sepsis. Nice segue.
Nailed it.
Nice completely random segue there. In which the infection spreads to the entire body through the bloodstream.
So does it count as a segue if we like call it a segue when it happens? Because a segue is supposed to be like a smooth transition, right?
Yeah, it's also a personal transportation device.
Right, right. But it stole its name.
So is it still a segue if you call it a segue?
Yeah, I don't know. Because it's no longer a smooth transition.
Right.
But if it's a segue and they're talking about segues, then I think it really kind of nails
the mark. What if you're riding a segue while you're talking about segues?
Yeah. So in our episode, our Munchausen's episode, we have a long debate about, just go listen to
Paradoxes. There we go. Because the body's immune system is weakened by the drugs, the body is unable to fight off even simple infections, and a simple infection can become a complex infection, leading to death. So treatments, NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Yeah.
These are anti-inflammatory medications that will relieve some of the swelling because they reduce swelling, and the primary effect of this illness is to inflame things.
Yeah.
Like political action committees, stuff like that.
Right.
So NSAIDs are milder than many other lupus drugs and can be taken either alone or to treat a mild flare-up or in combination with other medications.
And if you want to learn a little bit more about NSAIDs, depending on when we release this, we're either about to drop a pain control episode, or we did drop a pain control episode last Monday. So
you're either educated or will soon be educated about NSAIDs.
Absolutely.
Another one is going to be anti-malarial drugs.
Oh, okay.
Like Plaquenil.
Yeah.
They're key to controlling lupus long-term, and some lupus patients may be on Plaquenil for the rest of their lives.
Oh, wow.
So they think of anti-malarials as sort of a lupus life insurance. I wonder if you can buy lupus life insurance.
You think so?
Other than Plaquenil.
Right, yeah. I don't know. You know. Depends, does Medicaid cover? Anyway.
Right. Steroids. Synthetic cortisone medications are some of the most effective treatments for reducing swelling, the pain, the tenderness associated with inflammation of lupus. Cortisone usually works quickly to relieve the symptoms. However, cortisone can also cause many unwelcome side effects. Some of those are like weight gain or localized swelling. I know that if you're on long-term steroids, they can get what's called moon face, where their face actually swells up and becomes more round.
Oh, like a moon.
Exactly.
And they said I wasn't smart. But then
are you also made of cheese?
Yeah, that's obvious. So,
is usually prescribed only when other medications like the NSAIDs or the antimalarials are not sufficient to control the lupus. Then you get into the immunosuppressant medications. Immunosuppressant medications are medications that suppress the immune system.
What?
I know. I slowed that down just so we didn't like surprise people who were driving.
Yeah.
You know, we really don't want to cause accidents with this information.
So it's funny. So one of our recent episodes, we were talking about we have a listener who pointed out that I say vena cava when it's pronounced cava. And one of the things Mark mentioned. So of course we started saying cava then excessively. Because, you know, that's the kind of people we are.
Uh-huh.
And Mark mentions like, yeah, he probably just drove off the road while listening to this. So
screaming at the radio.
Yeah. So it's funny because I got a text from him today. And all it said in all caps is cave. That's all it said. So I think he's heard the episode.
Do you know why he's so militant about that?
Why?
So the reason is because he got into a big argument with a professor in college over the proper pronunciation of it.
Yeah.
And actually went out and researched it, like, through Merriam-Webster and stuff like that. So, yeah, he – and then what's really funny is I was talking to him about this around another employee who had access to a computer. And they pulled it up as he's talking. They go, actually, Google says it could go either way.
Oh. Is Ralph okay?
Yeah. He just walked away with a twitch. So, immunosuppressants. Many were used in patients who received organ transplants to help prevent their body from rejecting those transplants. However, these drugs are now used to treat certain autoimmune diseases such as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, and we'll get into in the next section psoriasis.
All right.
I'm on an immunosuppressant.
Are you?
I am. That's what I went and did today before I came here.
I know.
Oh.
I don't care.
I know.
I'm joking. I care, Mark.
It's okay. So DHEA is a mild male hormone that is effective in treating some forms of mild to moderate lupus, including hair loss, alopecia. joint pain, fatigue, or cognitive dysfunction. DHEA can also be effective against osteoporosis.
Oh, wow.
Didn't know that. So, yeah, this is kind of a brief synopsis over lupus. I remember when I first started in EMS, in emergency services. There was not much known about lupus.
Right.
And a lot of medics kind of felt it was just a...
bullshit.
Kind of disease.
Yeah.
You know, but back then, there was not a lot of information about autoimmune disorders in general.
Yeah.
Especially in the general medical community. So, we're going to move on from lupus to psoriasis, something that's near and dear to my heart.
It's psoriasis?
Okay, Mr. Puffingston. So, psoriasis is a common skin condition that speeds up the life cycle of the skin cells. I remember reading at one point where a normal life cycle of a skin cell is like 28 days. It's like 4 to 5 days with a psoriasis skin cell.
Oh, yeah.
It causes the cells to build up rapidly on the surface of the skin. The skin, extra skin cells form scales and red patches. So they will generally start out as red patches, and then they will raise up and they'll become very dried out and become very scaly. You tend to slough off a lot of extra skin. Yeah. Almost in like a dandruff-like way.
Yeah.
They can also become, because they're dry and everything, they'll also become very itchy and sometimes painful. What I experienced is that, like, if you're sitting somewhere and, well, like if you're sitting in a chair for a long time,
right,
your skin can build up a certain amount of moisture just because there's no airflow there.
Sure.
Right. And when you go from a very dry patch of skin to a more moist patch of skin, that can make it itch like a motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
And then it does the same when you go back the other direction.
Well,
when
damn it goes
from moist back to dry.
Just can't win.
No, not really. Although I got to tell you, with the psoriasis, I have been a number of times where I've hit the perfect scratch.
Yeah.
Where it just like buckles your knees a little bit. just perfect, you know. Psoriasis is a chronic disease. It often comes and goes. It can. I know the conventional thought is it can be very seasonal. And during the summer, it may be better, which one of the treatments we'll get into is just sunlight.
Oh, yeah. I've heard the UV light treatments
for So, psoriasis signs and symptoms are different for everyone. Common signs are red patches of skin covered with thin silvery scales. Small scaling pods, commonly seen in children. Dry or cracked skin that may bleed. Itching or burning or soreness. So, I have a fairly advanced form of psoriasis. So, I don't know if you remember back before I got on the immunosuppressants, I was at the creek. We had the plastic coverings on the corners.
Yeah.
And I would stand there and just, like, scratch my whole back at one time.
I do remember that.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
But, like, at where I lived at the time, I was living in a place in downtown Vancouver. I had actually worn the corners off of door frames.
Oh, wow.
Doing the same thing that weren't protected. So, I actually wore the paint off and started wearing, like, the corner down.
Yeah.
Like that, because I'd just stand there at night and just scratch my whole back.
Felt, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Felt amazing. You can also get stiff and swollen joints. Psoriasis patches can range from a few spots or dandruff-like scaling to major eruptions that cover large areas. I had, for long periods of my life, I had probably about just under 40% of my body.
Wow.
Covered by psoriasis patches.
Whoa.
Yeah. So... so, and there are several different types of psoriasis. These would include, Chris?
Oh, well, these obviously there's plaque psoriasis. Actually, I got a quick question for you. So, is that like a common measurement when it comes to psoriasis treatment, like percentage of like body coverage?
Once it gets to a certain point,
gotcha.
I think. Because you'll have people who just like get it on their elbows, or they'll get it on their knees, or they just have... I can't hear myself as well now.
Yeah, I turned the headphones were loud. After you mentioned that, I'm like, yeah, headphones are actually pretty loud.
Oh, okay. Am I going deaf? I can't hear myself. So, yeah, I mean, because like I said, a lot of people that suffer from psoriasis, small patches.
Yeah.
You know, that are, or, you know, moderate patches or like on their arms or, you know, I had more of a systemic.
Okay, gotcha.
I had all my, you know, my back, my legs, my chest, my scalp, my
neck,
arms, my hands.
My back.
Right. That's how I described it to the doctor.
Yeah. Mark, where is your psoriasis? Is
it my neck, my back.
Plaque psoriasis. So plaque psoriasis is the most common form. Plaque psoriasis is plaque psoriasis causes dry, raised, red skin lesions for the reasons that Mark mentioned, and also known as plaques, covered with silvery scales. These plaques,
I think silvery scales is an oversell of what goes on.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's just dry, white skin.
You wouldn't call it silvery?
Yeah, I'm not like shimmering.
You're like one of those guys from Twilight when they hit the sun.
So I was going to say is that one of the things you can do to help with psoriasis is moisturizer.
Okay.
Right? So I was working at a store and I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You ever had exceptionally dry skin, Chris?
Yeah.
You ever put moisturizer on it when it's exceptionally dry?
No.
It burns.
It burns!
Right, as it soaks in.
Mm-hmm.
I covered both my legs.
Oh, how'd that go?
On a lunch break. At home. Went home. I just lived up the road.
Yeah.
You know, went home. Applied it to both my legs. Laid on the floor for about 15 minutes, just dying.
No, Jesus. I'm not coming back for my lunch break. I am done.
After that 15 minutes, once it soaked in, as long as you kept it moist.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're fine. It was pretty good. It was just during that. So I learned to only put the moisturizer on, like, after getting out of the shower when the plaque psoriasis was.
That makes more sense.
But doing it straight from very, very dry, unpleasant experience.
Yeah. Well, the plaques can actually occur anywhere in your body, including your genitals and the soft tissue inside your mouth.
Interesting, I was told by a dermatologist one time, not on your lips, not on your penis.
Really?
That's actually one of the defining characteristics.
Huh.
Yeah.
If it is on your penis, you probably need to listen to our STD episode.
Go to a different doctor.
Yeah. So, nail psoriasis. Psoriasis can affect fingernails and toenails, causing pitting, abnormal nail growth, and discoloration. Psoriatic?
Yep.
Psoriatic nails might loosen and separate from the nail bed. And severe cases may cause the nail to crumble.
So I was talking to my dermatologist last time because I used to have the psoriatic nails.
Yeah.
And they've all cleared up with immunosuppressants except for my big toes.
Hmm.
So my question was, okay, is it still psoriasis or is this like a toe fungus?
Or do I really need big toes? Right.
Right. Yeah. Just cut those bitch bits off.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, you know, he goes, it looks like with the pitting of the nails and everything like that, and everything like that, it goes, looks like psoriasis. I said, okay, well, is there something I can do for it? Because, you know, they have topical creams.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And I thought, well, you know, try a topical cream. He goes, well,
cut off the toe.
No, it's even worse.
Oh.
He goes, yeah, we can do something for it, but most people don't opt for it. I said, okay.
Hit me, doctor.
Basically, injections into the cuticles.
I'm good.
Yeah. Doesn't bother me that much, is what I said to him. He goes, that's what I thought. Yeah, they have to inject the medication straight into the base of the nail.
God, it sounds to be painful.
Yeah, so.
Oh, God. So.
I actually opted for cutting off the toe.
Yeah. Gutate?
Sure.
Gutate.
Gutate.
Gutate psoriasis.
Gutate. Gutate. Gutate.
Gutate psoriasis. That's probably not how it's pronounced, but that's what you're getting today. This type primarily affects young adults and children. It's usually triggered by a bacterial infection such as strep throat. It's marked by a small water drop-shaped scaling lesions on your trunk, arms, legs, and scalp. The lesions are covered by a fine scale.
Fine. So if I get strep throat, I should go out and check my tree?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense. They aren't as thick as the typical plaques are. You may have a single outbreak that goes away on its own, or you may have repeated episodes. Inverse psoriasis. Is this like where you have like patches of perfect skin?
Mm-hmm.
This mainly affects...
It's like looking at a negative.
No, gotcha. This mainly affects the skin in the armpits, in the groin, under the breast, and around the genitals. Inverse psoriasis causes smooth patches of red inflamed skin that worsen with friction and sweating. Fungal infections may trigger this type of psoriasis.
So one of the reasons why it's red and not plaqued is because those areas stay moist more.
Oh, okay.
Because they're in areas where folds of skin and stuff like that. That's why the fungal infections can...
A lot of sweat glands in those areas, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
makes sense.
One of the few times boob sweat works in your advantage.
pustular psoriasis.
Pustular.
This uncommon form of psoriasis can occur in widespread patches, generalized pustular psoriasis, or in smaller areas on your hands, feet, or fingertips. It generally develops quickly, with pus-filled blisters appearing just hours after your skin becomes red and tender. Tender. The blisters may come and go frequently. Generalized pustular psoriasis can cause fever, chills, severe itching, and diarrhea. And also, another thing to remember is anytime you have breaks in the skin, be it from blisters or from, you know, the cracking of dry psoriasis, the risk of infection is going to come along mm-hmm. with that. And of course, also if you're taking immunosuppressants, risk of infection is much greater. Mm-hmm. Erythrodermic psoriasis. The least common type of psoriasis is erythrodermic psoriasis.
Erythrodermic psoriasis.
Erythrodermic psoriasis. It's fine. I get the erythrodermic fine, but whenever I read the word...
Because you're trying not to pronounce the P.
Yeah, and whenever I read the word that we've read 100 times already, just fine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it can cover your entire body with red peeling rash. It can itch or burn intensely. And then finally, psoriatic arthritis. So in addition to inflamed scaly skin,
psoriatic arthritis
causes swollen, painful joints that are typical of arthritis. So typical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So typical.
Almost cliche.
Right, really. sometimes the joint symptoms are the first and only manifestation of psoriasis, or at times only nail changes are seen. Symptoms range from mild to severe, and psoriatic arthritis can affect any joint. Although the disease usually isn't crippling, as other forms of arthritis, it can cause stiffness in progressive joint damage that, in the most serious cases, may lead to permanent deformity.
So I read through some of the research that about 30% of psoriasis patients develop psoriatic arthritis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. Yay.
Yay.
You know, I mean, it was an expensive upgrade when I got the psoriasis, but in the long term, I think it's really worth it. You know.
Well, I mean, the resale value is going to be greatly impacted by the options you have.
Yeah, sure, you got psoriasis, but how many people have psoriasis with the psoriatic arthritis? I mean, it's only a 30% gain.
You know, to me, it's kind of like making modifications to your home. Sometimes it may not actually increase the value you get, but it is going to help its ability to sell.
Right. You know. It's not a dollar-for-dollar thing, but you also get the usage out of it, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, the cause of psoriasis isn't fully understood, although it is believed to be related to the immune system problem with the T cells, not the T birds. That's actually a gang from Greece.
Really? I thought it was a type of car.
It is also, but the name of the gang was the T birds, I believe.
Oh, wow. Hmm. From Greece. That's not normally straight out of Greece. Straight out of Athens? Is that the latest? Okay. Straight out of Compton. What? Never mind. You're old. You wouldn't get it.
Yeah, because I wasn't around during that.
Well, I mean, you were, but you were probably already senile by then.
Oh, good God. with the T cells and other white blood cells called neutrophils in your body, T cells normally travel through the body to defend. We shall defend against foreign substances, such as viruses and bacteria. But if you have psoriasis, you know, the T cells attack healthy skin cells by mistake. They're not perfect.
Whoopsie.
As if to heal the wound or fight off an infection.
And they go home and they like high five each other. And someone's like, hey, yeah, dick. Like, what? Yeah. What? We kicked that ass. No, dude, that was the skin. God, fuck.
Again.
Damn it.
Overactive T cells. Because they're overactive. They're
I think your T cells just get drunk before they go out and fight, and then that's the problem.
Also trigger increased production of healthy skin cells. More T cells, more problems. And other white blood cells, especially neutrophils.
Okay. For the record, it is true. That doesn't mean you want a low white blood cell count.
No, not at all. Yeah. In fact, I went on a – back when the –
Okay.
Back when the immunosuppressants were first coming out, one of the ones I went on was a once-a-week injection.
Yeah.
And I had to go get my blood drawn every week in between the injections to make sure that my T-cell count wasn't getting below 200.
Yeah, so Mark was talking about more T-cells, more problems. So these T-cells travel to the skin, causing redness and sometimes pus in the pustular lesions, like the pustular psoriasis that we talked about. Dilated blood vessels in psoriasis-affected areas create warmth and redness in the skin lesions. This process becomes an ongoing cycle in which new skin cells move to the outermost layer of skin too quickly. In days rather than weeks, Skin cells build up in thick, scaly patches on the skin surface, continuing until the treatment stops the cycle. Is that what you're talking about? Talking about the skin, the lifespan of a skin cell versus it taking weeks. So these are only taking days instead of weeks. Okay. Right. So just what causes T cells to malfunction in people with psoriasis is not exactly clear. Researchers believe that it has both genetics and environmental factors can play a role, though. So complications. If you have psoriasis.
Oh, real quick. So I was
Fuck off, Mark. I'm reading.
Okay. Well, it turned left really quick.
Yeah, complications that Mark can eat a dick. If you have psoriasis.
You can buy a bag of dicks to send somebody.
Can you really?
A little gummy dicks. You can send somebody to eat a bag of dicks.
Oh, God. That's amazing.
So I was on the medication.
Yeah.
Once a week, everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So on this medication that was suppressing my immune system, they didn't want my T cells to go below 200, mainly because a T cell count of below 200 is considered HIV.
Oh.
I'm assuming not in the position of taking a medication to suppress your immune system. They wouldn't go straight to HIV.
Right.
But obviously that's where you start getting into your critical problems of being able to defend your body's ability to fight off infections. So they want to make sure I didn't get below 200. Normal range is 500 to 1500. On an immunosuppressant, I never got below 1200.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's with my immune system being repressed.
You actually have a pretty rocking immune system, though, don't you?
Yeah. That's why it's surprising when I get really sick.
Humble brag. So complications.
Trust me, there's not many things to humble brag about me. It's my immune system is the highest point.
Woo! Is that on your Tinder account?
Exactly. I got one hell of an immune system.
So
baby, I got the biggest immune system you've ever seen in your life.
Basically, baby, if you got diseases, I'm good with that. So complications. Well, if you have psoriasis, you're at greater risk for developing certain diseases. These include, so we already mentioned, psoriatic arthritis. But this complication, psoriasis, can cause joint damage, loss of function in some joints, and it can be debilitating. Eye conditions. Certain eye disorders, such as conjunctivitis, also known as pink eye, blepharitis? Blepharitis?
Sure.
Yeah.
Uveitis.
And another one. Are more common in people with psoriasis.
That one.
Obesity. People with psoriasis, especially those with more severe diseases. That is Mark's tummy in the background that you hear there.
Especially the cause of my obesity is psoriasis, of course.
Are more likely to be obese. It's not clear how these diseases are linked, however. The inflammation linked to obesity may play a role in the development of psoriasis. Or it may be that people with psoriasis are more likely to gain weight, possibly because they're less active because of their psoriasis. Type 2 diabetes. Risk of type 2 diabetes raised in people with psoriasis. The more severe the psoriasis, the greater likelihood of type 2 diabetes.
You're talking fast again.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I just, yeah.
All right, so Mark thinks y'all are dumb.
No.
So I'm going to slow down so you can comprehend.
Okay, don't mansplain this to them.
Type 2.
Good Lord.
All right, type 2 diabetes. So the risk of type 2 diabetes rises in people with psoriasis. The more severe the psoriasis, the greater likelihood of type 2 diabetes. High blood pressure. The odds of having high blood pressure are higher in people with psoriasis. Cardiovascular disease. For people with psoriasis, the risk of cardiovascular disease is twice as high as it is for those without the disease. Psoriasis and some treatments also increase the risk of irregular heartbeat, stroke, high cholesterol, and atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis.
You should know that one.
I know. It's hard for me, though. It's always been a hard word for me.
Metabolic syndrome. This cluster of conditions, including high blood pressure, elevated insulin levels, and abnormal cholesterol levels, increase your risk of heart disease.
Bullshit.
Other autoimmune diseases you can also develop. Because of the psoriasis, you can develop celiac disease, sclerosis, the inflammatory bowel disease called Crohn's disease. Are more likely to strike people with psoriasis.
Ooh, strike. I like the way we're talking about T cells because they defend.
I will strike you.
And these things can strike.
Would you like to be struck?
Yeah. You're about to get struck.
Parkinson's disease. This would the chronic neurological condition, which more people is more likely to occur with people with psoriasis. And I think these are probably more correlation things. I don't know that they've actually determined a causation between the two. I think it's more that they've seen an increase in these other diseases with patients with psoriasis.
Yeah, and I know it's kind of some of them flow together. I mean, when you're talking about high blood pressure, like high blood pressure is a common risk factor for other cardiovascular diseases as well. And so I wonder if that Is it that psoriasis causes high blood pressure, and then high blood pressure causes cardiovascular? Yes,
because the growth of the skin cells and the inflammation at the cellular level increases vascular pressure.
Oh, that makes sense. It's
harder to push the blood through those
areas. That makes sense. Okay.
So, yeah. Kidney disease. Again, kidney disease. Anything that causes inflammation in the kidneys and damages the function of the ability, or damages the ability of the kidneys to function, is going to cause scarring in that, because the structure of the kidneys is actually fairly delicate. Correct?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
So it's easy, very easy to damage that.
Yeah.
So anything that you do, high blood pressure, diabetes, everything like that, is going to increase the problems with kidney disease. And then emotional problems. It can cause, affect the quality of your life. You know, psoriasis is associated with low self-esteem, depression. You can also withdraw from socially. I know my teenage years growing up in Oklahoma, I had, you know, the psoriatic passages up and down my legs.
Oklahoma.
Jesus. And up and down my arms. So even in the middle of summer, I'd wear long sleeve shirts and long pants.
Toasty.
108 degrees outside.
I am.
You know, but it was...
Say 108, right?
Uh-huh.
It's not like saying 180.
No.
Like, fuck.
No. Okay, that's only like 60 above the highest temperature in Death Valley.
Well, I don't know. Could have happened.
No, it couldn't have. That's the point I'm trying to make. So there's a number of treatments for psoriasis with varying degrees. The first one's going to be topical treatments. Creams such as corticosteroids, ointments that you apply to your skin to treat mild to moderate plaques. This is obviously... smaller patches becomes more financially restrictive or reality-wise if you have large patches of your skin. Now, your topical corticosteroids, they reduce inflammation and relieve itching, and this can be treated for multiple. They can be used to treat multiple symptoms. But the problem is that long-term use or overuse of strong corticosteroids can cause thinning of the skin.
Oh.
Which you're already getting some of that with the psoriasis, because it's reproducing so quickly. Plus, it may just stop working over time. It's usually best to use topical corticosteroids as a short-term treatment during the flare-ups.
Okay.
Vitamin D has been found. This is why getting out in the sun and the UV rays, because your body produces more vitamin D at that point, is found to be helpful. So, Dovinex. I did use Dovinex on my elbows and areas like that, and I found it to be very effective. The problem was that the cream didn't work as well. I used the ointment, which is actually in a petroleum jelly base, and so that would stay on the skin for longer periods of time. So, yeah, but then you're leaving like a greasy patch everywhere you go.
Oh,
gotcha. Every time you put your elbows down. Anthralin, this medication helps slow the skin cell growth, but it can irritate the skin, and it stains almost anything it touches. You have your topical retinoids. The most common side effect of these is skin irritation. It's a vitamin A derivative. And the medications can also increase sensitivity to sunlight. So while using the medications, you always have to apply sunscreen. Salicylic acid, which is not the same thing as acetylsalic acid. Acetylsalic acid is actually a combination with acetic acid and salicylic acid.
Oh, gotcha.
But they do have the same base forms. It is a... It promotes sloughing of the dead skin and reduces the scaling. So the topical corticosteroids can be used combined with the corticosteroids or coal tar, which is derived from coal. Coal tar reduces scaling, itching, and inflammation. I remember for many years I used a shampoo that
was
coal tar based.
I've seen like anti-dandruff shampoos.
Mm-hmm. Coal tar. And it's not bad, except it stings.
Oh. Well, so, that.
And then moisturizers, yeah, moisturizing creams just keep the, they won't heal the psoriasis, but they reduce the itching, the scaling, the dryness. You know, like I said, with the inverse psoriasis, where they're in more moist areas, so you don't get the scaling because the skin doesn't dry out.
I noticed they don't mention that it burns the life out of you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it burns you to the soul. Absolutely. Yeah. Especially in large patches.
Right.
So, light therapy, phototherapy, there's a regular sunlight. Exposure to ultraviolet rays in the sunlight or artificial light slows skin cell turnover and reduces scaling and inflammation. Brief daily exposure to small amounts of sunlight may improve psoriasis, but intense sun exposure can worsen symptoms and skin damage. I remember back when I first started getting treatments for this, basically the dermatologist said, yeah, you're the only person that doesn't need to be putting sunscreen on. they have since changed that tune.
Oh, okay. You know? Well, I imagine they probably had a lot of people getting sunburnt.
Right. Oh, well, sun, you know, it's skin cancer.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Great. You cleared up your psoriasis. On the downside, we're going to have to cut off part of your skin.
Sometimes these treatments are a little give and take.
Right. they're up and down, you know. Nothing's perfect. You can also do narrowband UV phototherapy. This is a newer treatment. Not to be confused with UVB phototherapy, which is controlled dosages of UVB light from an artificial light source. One of the, when I started, they said, go to a tanning salon that uses UVB lamps.
Oh.
Yeah, so during this winter time. And then you can couple the narrowband and just normal UVB.
I have never been in a tanning bed.
Really?
Nope, not once. Hmm.
Make sure the fan's pointing in there because it gets really, really warm.
Yeah, I'm probably, I don't know if I'm ever going to do one.
Why not? Just don't experience life? One.
No. Yeah, that's it. So. No, I don't know. I don't really see a need. I also don't, so interesting enough, went to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people assume, due to my fair complexion, that I would burn easy. Mm-hmm. I don't burn. I don't tan. I don't anything.
Is this like you don't bruise?
No, this is real. Okay. No, just joking. No, like we're literally sitting. I mean, that's not true. I mean, obviously, I do burn. I do tan. But guys, I'm like, yeah, we go to Mexico and get a tan. And I'm sitting there laying out in the sun, which, by the way, just seems to be more sun down in Mexico than in Oregon. And laying out in the sun, I'm wearing sunscreen. But my wife and our two friends that were there are also in sunscreen, and they're like, they're in the higher SPF, and they're like kind of kicking it to the shade. They all got burnt. I'm sitting out there like in the sun, like, come and get me. Nothing. No tan, no burn, no nothing. I came back from Mexico. You couldn't tell. There was one friend at work that's like, oh, it looks like you got a tan. I'm like, you're nice, but no, it doesn't look like that.
You have Geckerman therapy, which doctors combine UVB treatment and the cold tar.
And geckos.
There you go. All over your skin. And then Sorilin Plus Ultraviolet, which is PUVA. This involves taking a light sensitive sensitizing medication. I did this also. You take a pill every day. You take a pill, I think, right before it. And then you step into a very short burst of UVA light. This is usually about 30 seconds in there. So you get it. You take this. You drive all the way over to the doctor's appointment. You take all your clothes off. You step into this booth for literally 30 seconds, step out, get dressed, and leave.
Wow.
You know, this is pretty aggressive, and it's said to be good for, you know, the more severe cases of psoriasis. And then the last one we have is excimer laser.
Lasers.
The form of the laser therapy used for mild to moderate psoriasis treats only the involved patches without harming the healthy skin.
Oh, cool.
So it's just a little bit more controlled rather than just bathing in the light.
Pew!
Oral or injected medications, they have a whole slew of immunotherapy, immunosuppressive therapy medications, or biologics is what they call them. But also things like retinoids. This is the vitamin A. This group of drugs may help if you have severe psoriasis, but doesn't respond to other therapies. Side effects include lip inflammation and hair loss. So, yeah, there's a downside to this.
Yeah.
Constant duck lips.
Which, depending on, you know, your selfie game, maybe it's an upside.
Exactly. Maybe a selling point.
Yeah.
And because such retinoids such as cerytane can cause severe birth defects, women must avoid these for at least 3 years after taking them. Must avoid pregnancy for at least 3 years after taking this medication.
You make it sound like it's a ball and dodgeball are trying to avoid.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just well, dicks.
You kind of are.
Right, that's true.
Right.
Just dicks flying at your hoo-ha. You got to jump out of the way.
Did I tell you about the guy who had a shirt on that said, Bukkake ruined my carpet?
No, but I mean it.
Is your life better for me having told you that?
So.
Don't describe Bukkake over the podcast. They can figure it out on their own, okay?
Okay. Just Google it. And if you do Google it, I would do like private browsing or incognito mode.
Yeah, not at work.
Not at work, but no. It is spelled B-U-K-K-E.
No, Jesus. Methotrexate. I did try methotrexate, and I had to stop taking it because it was tripling my liver enzymes, which is a side effect of long-term use. I will say this. It is the way to take a medication. You take a tablet, 12 hours later, take another one, 12 hours later, take another one, and you're done for the week.
Oh, sweet.
But yeah, I took it for 2 months. It completely cleared up my psoriasis. I stopped taking it because they started seeing my liver enzymes go up.
That's disappointing.
A couple years later, I started having a flare-up again. I went back to the same dermatologist. They put me back on it. And within two rounds, I tripled my liver enzymes.
No.
And they're like, yeah, I got to stop that.
Damn.
You have cyclosporins. Cyclosporin may, again, make you susceptible to kidney problems and high blood pressure, which will also increase your kidney problems.
So two of the names for cyclosporin. One is Gengraf. And I'm looking at that like it's a wizard.
Mm-hmm. From... Thou shalt not produce too many skin cells.
That's a Gengraf, the red and swollen?
No, the silver.
No, Gengraf, the silvery scales.
Because he glitters at night or something. And Noriel.
Hello, Noriel. How are you today?
Oh,
hello,
God.
Hello, Mom.
In case there's anyone that was wondering if we're nerdy or not, I think we...
Oh, no. If anybody's got to episode 30-some-odd that this is...
Right.
They know us. So, yeah. Similar to methotrexate, and it's effective, but can only be taken short-term. This is a Gengraf. Then you have drugs that alter the immune system. These are the biologics, and they're I'm on the infliximab. Which is also called Remicade. Remicade is used for a number of different things. It can be used for cancer. I told a buddy of mine who's a nurse I was on Remicade, and he was like, holy crap, because the only time he'd seen it was like...
Oh, geez.
At the cancer level, they like have to wear gowns and everything and protective clothing to use the Remicade. I'm like, oh, no, that's not me.
Yeah, well...
Literally, when I first started taking it, they mixed it in the room where I got it as an infusion. But this is a couple hour... Oh, sorry, man.
No, sorry.
A couple hour infusion. I went today. I got there at 2:30, and I was done at 5:30.
Wow. So
they have to up it in slow increments because it can drop your blood pressure.
Oh.
And so they'll start off at like 10 cc's per hour for 15 minutes and then 20, then 40, then 80, then 125, and then 250.
If you weren't such a weenie, maybe they could just go straight to high dose.
So the first time I did it, I told the nurse, I'm like, look, this dude's old school. Start rolling up the roller clamp until I start getting dizzy and then back it off a quarter turn and we'll call it good.
That's how we used to give dopamine. Right. So there's a medication called dopamine that we actually use to raise blood pressure. And I remember the dosage for it is measured in milligrams per kilogram or micrograms per kilogram per minute. So it can be a heck of a calculation.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of paramedics are like, look, here's the thing, man. When you go to give that, just open it up. And then when their blood pressure comes up, go ahead and just dial it back to whatever it's supposed to be.
Because most of those paramedics aren't working in the field anymore.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
There are, I mean, we use the clock method. There was take the weight in pounds and drop the last number, and that's how many drops per minute.
That's what I would do.
Just because it was a very complex equation when you're in the middle of a situation, you really can't whip out a pen and a pencil.
Right.
And this is back, in the 90s when you didn't have fancy schmancy cell phones with calculators on them.
Well, then people would call you a nerd if you said that. Right. Calculator. You know what we call a nerd.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Other medications are thioguanine, hydroxyurea, and then there's also some new ones out that are there's a Stelar and there's Humira, which are injections. You can take at home. There's Otezla, which is a pill, and they all do essentially the same thing. They're the immunosuppressants. So, I mentioned earlier, do you want to hit celiac?
Yeah, let's hit up celiac disease.
Here we go. Celiac disease, gluten sensitivity, and enteropathy.
Yeah, sometimes called SPRU or...
Coliac?
Sure.
Question mark?
SP question mark?
Right.
Is an immune reaction to eating gluten, a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye. If you have celiac disease, eating gluten triggers an immune response in your small intestine over time. This reaction damages your small intestine's lining and prevents absorption of some nutrients. The intestinal damage can often cause diarrhea, fatigue, weight loss, bloating, and anemia, and can lead to serious complications. Should we talk about non-celiac's gluten sensitivity?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so this is not the same as non-celiac gluten sensitivity. This is not what – very few people actually have celiac disease. That's a rare disease. However, there is a growing population that are claiming gluten sensitivity, and it's very controversial.
So here's my problem.
Well, I mean, one of them, but yeah.
that's one of my problems. So I have a family member.
Okay.
Who works in an Italian restaurant.
Gotcha.
And they'll have people that will come in and order gluten-free food and say they have a severe gluten sensitivity. If you have celiac disease, you just can't go into that building.
Yeah.
Because there's gluten in the air and everywhere.
Right.
If you're truly gluten sensitive.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people, from what I've read, distancing myself from that statement. From what I understand is that a lot of people who say they're gluten insensitive, they will stop eating bread and stuff like that.
Right.
Which will make you feel different. A lot of times if you alter your diet in some way, you will have, I mean, people will do like a cleanse.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a juice cleanse. I'm going to do a 3-day cleanse. So in your intestines, you have certain flora, you have a certain bacteria, you have certain everything like that. And what is in there is based upon your diet. If you have a sudden change to that diet, you are going to cause a change in that flora, which is going to cause bowel disruption. So you're going to feel like you're cleansing because you're getting rid of everything.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah. And that's been the hard part about nailing this down. It's actually kind of one of the things I was actually, while Mark was talking, I was actually Googling this a few seconds ago. But a lot of doctors are very quick to say that they really don't believe that the current level, that most of the people who claim to be gluten sensitive, they don't really believe it's as widespread as we would have it believe. However, a lot of doctors won't outright dismiss non-celiac gluten sensitivity.
Right.
Because, I mean, it could be. You know, there's a study done by Australians, done in Australia recently. And this is kind of the more, actually it's not recent, it's probably like 2011, 2012 now. But this is one of the more famous ones that they did something they shouldn't have. And what they did was they released preliminary findings before completing the study. People aren't sure exactly why they did it. Some people say it might have been to secure more funding, but they did. And the preliminary findings were showing a lot of merit to gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they went to go complete the study by increasing the sample size and basically by increasing sample size and completing the current study, they actually found that no, it didn't. There actually wasn't even a correlation. But basically what they're doing in their study is they were providing people with gluten-free food and then changing their diets to food with gluten and not telling them.
Right.
And they couldn't find, and then of course they had a control group that was placebo and all that stuff. And then after they were done, they actually couldn't find any difference between the group that had gluten and the group that didn't.
And here's the problem with releasing those preliminary findings. The news is going to jump all over that.
Oh, they did.
And they're not going to jump all over the full study.
Because the full study is boring.
Right.
The full study of, never mind.
It's not new. It's not headline worthy. So then you have people who have gotten bad information.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and then another thing that this mentions, and Mark, you already mentioned this too, is that there's a lot of, just by changing your diet, you're going to have changes, whether it has anything to do with gluten or not.
You do anything, you make any major change to your diet, your bowels are going to empty.
Yeah.
Because you've changed, the flora in there has changed significantly.
Yeah.
And with that feeling, you may feel you have more energy, you may feel better for a period of time.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's really hard.
Until that flora normalizes.
Yeah. And it's really hard to determine, you know, is that because of gluten or is it not? You don't really know because it's probably something that's going to happen anyway.
Right.
So anyway, I don't know.
I personally feel that gluten sensitivity is.
Non-celiac gluten sensitivity.
Non-celiac gluten sensitivity is over. Used.
Oh, yeah. And most of it's self-diagnosed.
Yeah. So, symptoms of the celiac disease, which is an actual autoimmune disorder, are can vary greatly and are different in children and adults.
Oh, also, I do want to say, be careful with self-diagnosing yourself and removing gluten from your diet, because that's not necessarily healthy.
You do need, I mean, you need a balance.
Yeah. It's one of those things where a lot of the foods that contain gluten are actually perfectly healthy and very nutritious foods. Mm-hmm. And if you cut them out of your diet without replacing them with something of equal nutrition, you can become malnourished.
Right.
So be careful. This isn't, I know most people out there with this are self-diagnosed, but it really isn't something you should self-diagnose.
Well, you should never self-diagnose.
Right. Exactly. It's really something that you need to, yeah.
So the signs and symptoms are different between adults and children. Adults may experience bloating and gas, abdominal pain, nausea, constipation, and vomiting. They can also become very, very tired. They have diarrhea, fatigue, and weight loss. So more than half of the adults with celiac disease have signs and symptoms that are not related to the digestive system, including anemia, usually resulted from iron deficiency, loss of bone density, itchy or blistery skin rashes, dermatitis herpetiformis.
No, wait, what?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what it's called.
Anytime I see herp in anything, I get flashbacks. I mean, I get nervous.
Yeah. damage to dental enamel, mouth ulcers, headaches and fatigue, nervous system injury, including numbness and tingling in the feet and hands, and possible problems with balance, cognitive impairment. You get joint pain, reduced function of the spleen, hyposplenism.
Ah, yes.
And acid reflux and heartburn. In children 2 years old, under 2 years old, typical signs of symptoms of celiac include vomiting, chronic diarrhea, swollen belly, failure to thrive, poor appetite, and muscle wasting. Jesus. Mm.
Muscle wasting sounds shitty.
Well, I mean, failure to thrive in a child under the age of 2.
Actually, diarrhea sounds shitty.
Other children that are older, they also have the diarrhea, but also constipation. Jesus. Weight loss. Don't ever look at me like that again. You look like Tom from MySpace.
Oh, yeah.
When you do that.
actually, I know the picture.
I got a friend in you, too, so... diarrhea, constipation, weight loss, irritability, short stature.
Hmm.
I wonder if that's from a nutrient deficiency.
No, I don't have celiacs.
Delayed puberty. Yeah. I had delayed puberty.
You did?
No.
I was going to say.
I hit that full stride right at the perfect time.
I say, you probably came out of the womb like, hey, mom.
I was actually small and I had to spend time in the ICU.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They thought a hole in my heart.
Oh.
I got shipped off to a bigger hospital.
In an
ambulance.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, it turns out he doesn't have a heart.
The NICU nurses loved me because I was the only baby in the place that didn't have like 9,000 tubes sticking out of me. They could actually pick me up and hold me and stuff like that.
Wow.
So I go back there every year and see if they can still pick me up. Neurological symptoms including attention deficit or hyperactivity disorder, learning disabilities, headaches, lack of muscle coordination, and seizures. Lack of muscle coordination, Chris.
Yeah, but short stature.
No, good point. So, some of the causes.
Celiac disease occurs from... I don't know why I went total Captain Kirk on that. celiac disease occurs from an interaction between genes. I don't mean Levi's. I mean genes. Like, right, exactly. Eating foods with gluten and other environmental factors. But the precise cause isn't known. Infant feeding practices, gastrointestinal infections might contribute to developing celiac disease. Sometimes celiac disease is triggered or becomes active for the first time after a surgery, a pregnancy, childbirth, viral infection, or severe emotional stress. When the body's immune system overreacts to gluten in food, the reaction damages the tiny hair-like projections, known as the villi, that line the small intestine. Villi absorb vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients from the food you eat. If your villi are damaged, they can't do that. So no matter how much you eat, you won't get the nutrients that you need. Some gene variations appear to increase the risk of developing the disease. But having those gene variants doesn't mean that you'll get celiac disease, which suggests that additional factors must be involved. The rate of celiac disease in Western countries is estimated at about 1% of the population. Celiac disease is most common in Caucasians. However, it is now being diagnosed among many ethnic groups and is found globally. Complications. Untreated celiac disease can cause malnutrition. Obviously, we talked about earlier, your villi aren't able to absorb nutrients, and so malnutrition can result. This can lead to anemia and weight loss in children. Malnutrition can also cause slow growth and short stature. So, yeah, you're correct.
Yeah. Look at me. I rock.
You wrote this, by the way. Like, that's the best part. Loss of calcium and bone density. Malabsorption of calcium and vitamin D may lead to a softening of the bone, also known as osteomalacia and rickets.
Osteomalacia.
Yeah, osteomalacia. I knew that. I just want to make sure you did. So good job, Mark. Or rickets. In children and a loss of bone density, osteoporosis in adults. Do you think
crickets get rickets?
Of course. And if so for some odd reason, this I'm getting tired. It's getting late. It says infertility. I thought it said infertility and marriage. Like, really? Oh, shit. Maybe I do have celiacs. Anyway, because I think the vasectomy probably took care of the infertility. Anyway, infertility
caused and... caused the infertility.
And right, exactly. And miscarriage. Malabsorption of calcium and vitamin D can also contribute to reproductive issues. Lactose intolerance. Damage to your small intestine may cause you to experience abdominal pain and diarrhea after eating lactose-containing dairy products, even though they don't contain gluten. Once your intestine has... That would suck if you can't have gluten or dairy products. Mm-hmm. That'd be awful. Once your intestine has healed, you may be able to tolerate dairy products again. However, some people continue to experience lactose intolerance despite successful management of celiac disease.
Cancer. People with celiac disease who don't maintain a gluten-free diet have a greater risk of developing several forms of cancer, including intestinal lymphoma and small bowel cancer.
No.
Neurologic problems. Some people with celiac disease may develop neurologic problems such as seizures or peripheral neuropathy, diseases of the nerves that lead to both your hands and feet. So this is where...
It causes pain, too.
It causes pain. But as it progresses, it will actually lose the ability to sense pain. So this can also happen in diabetics. And this is why a lot of long-term, especially older diabetics, we see will wear shoes everywhere. Because it's very easy to then step on something, cut your foot, not know it, and they get infected. Not know it. And then you get gangrene.
That's not fun.
And children's celiac disease can lead to failure to thrive. We talked about all these. Just because of the lack of nutrients being able to be processed through.
Yeah.
Non-responsive celiac disease. As many as 30% of the people with celiac disease may not have or be able to maintain a good response to a gluten-free diet. So even though they have celiac and they're gluten-free, they're not responding well to the gluten-free. So you're kind of fucked both ways at that point.
Jesus.
This condition known as non-responsive celiac disease is often due to the combination of the diet with gluten. Therefore, it's important to work with a dietitian. I know a guy, he went to a chain Mexican place, right, that knew him. And they endeavored to make gluten-free food for him. So they were making his food, and he had an attack of his celiacs. And basically, they had used a knife that had touched something with gluten in it.
Oh, wow.
So the difference between people with gluten sensitivity and celiacs is a person who is gluten sensitive can go into an Italian restaurant and request a gluten-free dinner. And a person with celiacs just can't even go near an Italian restaurant because there's gluten in the air.
Right.
Because of the flour.
Oh, wow.
And people with non-responsive celiac disease may have additional conditions such as bacteria in the small intestine, microscopic colitis, poor pancreas function, irritable bowel syndrome or intolerance to lactose or fructose, which we talked about, and they may also have refractory celiac disease. Why are you staring at me, freak?
Well, you're fun to stare at. Refractory celiac disease. So, like I just hijacked that. Mm-hmm. In rare instances, the intestinal injury of celiac disease persists and leads to substantial malabsorption, even though you followed a strict gluten-free diet. This combination is known as refractory celiac disease. If you continue to experience signs and symptoms despite following a gluten-free diet for 6 months to 1 year, your doctor may recommend further testing and look for other explanations for your symptoms. Your doctor may also recommend treatment with a steroid to reduce intestinal inflammation or a medication that suppresses your immune system. All patients with celiac disease should be followed up to monitor their response of the disease to treatment. Speaking of treatment...
Dun, dun, dun. A strict, lifelong gluten-free diet isn't the only way to manage celiacs. In addition to wheat, foods that contain gluten are barley, bulgur. Durum, farina. You say farina. I say farina. You say graham flour. I say graham flour.
So graham flour. I guess like what they make graham crackers out of?
Sure.
Ah, cool. It is now.
Malt, rye, so no rye whiskey. Semolina.
Spelt?
A form of wheat. How's it spelt?
Rice.
And triticale. Triticale?
Triticale.
Sure. Your doctor may refer you to a dietitian who can help you plan a healthy gluten-free diet. Once you remove gluten from your diet, inflammation in your small intestine generally begins to lessen, usually within several weeks. Though you may start to feel better in just a few days. Complete healing and regrowth of the villi may take several months to several years. Healing in the small intestine tends to occur more quickly in children than in adults. If you accidentally eat a product that contains gluten, you may experience abdominal pain and diarrhea. Some people experience no signs or symptoms after eating gluten, but this doesn't mean it's not harmful to them. So if even if you're not getting the external effects, it doesn't mean it's not doing the damage. Even trace amounts of gluten in your diet can be damaging, whether or not they cause signs or symptoms. Hidden gluten.
Ooh. Stealth gluten.
Exactly. Can be present in foods, medications, or non-food products, including modified food starch, which is used as a preservative or food stabilizer, prescription or over-the-counter medications, vitamins and mineral supplements, herbal or nutritional supplements can all have gluten in them, lipstick products. Put a lot of wheat in your lipstick, do you?
Right.
Toothpaste and mouthwash. Here's a kick in the junk. I was doing really good till I licked that envelope.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, and the stamp. Although I don't think you should be ingesting this, Play-Doh.
A kid's eat Play-Doh all the damn time.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I have kids. Actually, my kids are pretty good at not eating it, but I distinctly remember growing up.
You can barely get your kids to eat pizza.
Right, exactly. Let alone Play-Doh. But that has no bearing on it. Like, children, my God, like a lot of times you'll be sitting there like, oh, for example, like my younger's like, eat the pizza. He's like, no. And they're like, get the crayon out of your mouth. Like, what? Actually designed to go in your mouth. Right. Like, that's what this is for. And that is not, yet you're there eating it.
If your nutritional deficiency is severe, your doctor or dietitian may recommend taking vitamins or mineral supplements, but as referenced in the previous section, make sure they are gluten-free. Mm-hmm. You may need to supplement your levels of calcium, your folate, iron, your B12, your D, your K, which would be potassium.
I'll regulate your D. Sorry.
I was going to make another joke there, but... yeah, that may be taken the wrong way. Then your zinc, I'll tell you after we record. Vitamin supplements are usually taken in pill form. If your digestive tract has trouble absorbing vitamins, your doctor may give them to you by injection. Anything else on celiac you can think about, Chris?
Nope, toast. I'm just joking.
Jeez, nobody's ready to go to bed. Anything else on autoimmune disorders?
No, I'm pretty much set.
Again, don't self-diagnose. There are tests for these disorders. There are defined things that they can check for. So please see a doctor or thump your mic, whichever. One would have done. And always seek medical advice from a doctor. Don't listen to us. Jesus.
Yeah.
If we're your medical advice, then you definitely need to go see a doctor. So
probably a psychologist, actually. that's probably what you need to see.
So, hey, reach out to us, please, on Facebook at Medical Stuff. We're on Instagram at MedicalStuff52.
I'm physically reaching out to Mark right now, by the way.
We're on Twitter at MedSideStuff, MedSideStuff.
Mm-hmm. Did you need to mention the book face?
Yeah. Or you can email us at MedSideStuff@yahoo.com.
Did you say Facebook already?
On Facebook at Medical Stuff or on Instagram at MedicalStuff52. And we finger bumped at the time.
Oh, gotcha.
You were focusing on the finger bump and less on the actual words that were coming out of my mouth.
Well, just in case the way Mark said the email sounded stupid, you can email us at medsidestuff@yahoo.com.
MedSideStuff. Mm-hmm. And do you have anything else for us, Chris?
No, I got nothing.
Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon. Have a good night and toast.